Hello and welcome to Open Room Talks, a podcast which draws on open room events, experience in connecting people to bring you quality discussions between industry experts, innovative suppliers, and high-powered end users on pertinent issues in a variety of sectors. I am Kiana Sapp, and joining me today for our seventh episode, I have Mark Gill and Seema Sharma. Mark graduated from the Royal Veterinary College as a veterinary surgeon in 2007. After a short stint in small animal practice in the West Midlands, he relocated to London and took up his first role in practice management. He has an MBA from Imperial College and is a chartered manager. He is currently operations director with the Goddard Veterinary Group, a 47-site small animal practice in London. His professional interests include strategic competitive advantage, technological innovation, and change leadership. Seema is the founder of the Smile Impressions Group of Dental Practices and the managing director of Dentabyte, her business management consultancy. Seema qualified as a dentist from Guy's Hospital in 1989, and she has established several entrepreneurial startup dental practices in and around London. She has a postgraduate certificate in dental education and an MBA from Imperial Business School. She is a non-executive director on the board of Goddard Veterinary Group and a fellow of the International College of Dentists. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Seema, you're in the very interesting position of being a dentist and operating dental practices while simultaneously sitting on the board of Goddard Veterinary Group. Why don't you kick us off by describing to our listeners some of the similarities and differences that you've noticed when it comes to the challenges presented by COVID-19 to the dental and veterinary sectors?
Yes, well, I joined the board at Goddard Veterinary Group last year, so I've been with them for about a year, and it was a very exciting moment to join another healthcare group and look at what I thought would be a very, very similar industry. Healthcare on the high street, you would think opticians, veterinary surgeries and dental surgeries operate very similarly, and indeed there are many similarities. I always thought dentistry was quite different from the optics industry in that we're primarily a service-based industry, so we don't have product to sell, such as frames. And the veterinary groups are very similar in that way because they're also predominantly service industry. But some of the very interesting things that came out of spending the year with GVG were that we came to look at how different the dental industry is because we have got some public funding in dentistry. So a large amount of the infrastructure that is in place in dentistry is led by organisations such as NHS England and the Care Quality Commission. The veterinary industry is a completely private industry, so designs its own protocols from scratch.
Mark, why don't you tell us a bit about why you think Seema was a good fit for you at Goddard? Why originally you asked for her to join you on the board?
Seema and I first met each other when we were studying for our MBA at Imperial together. One of the great things that I think about that experience was the opportunity to meet people from all sorts of different industries and kind of expand your horizons outside of your own specific industry. And we worked together during the MBA and stayed in contact afterwards. And then I think it was a few years later when we were looking to expand the range of experience and skills on our board. And Seema really sprung to mind as the perfect person, obviously knowing her personally and her skills and her attributes, but also that professional similarities between the veterinary and the dental sectors, that there's enough of them to make those similarities helpful to have a sort of mutual understanding and a shared language and an understanding of what the issues and the priorities might be, but also enough differences to bring different ways of looking at problems. So I think it's been really notable over the last year as we've now worked together in a professional capacity, the slightly different approaches that the two industries tend to have to fairly similar topics. And I think when you broaden those approaches, you can end up with better solutions to those problems because you're just taking a broader set of experiences together. So it's been a really interesting experience for us over the last year. And I think one of the interesting things, I suppose, then in sort of more recent times, we were working together on a number of longer term projects, and then COVID-19 hit. And that's
really blown a lot of our planned work out of the water. And the difference between the veterinary and the dental sector in terms of the impact has been particularly notable. And we, for example, have been able, in the veterinary sector, have been able to continue trading, albeit with restrictions on the services that we can offer and clearly how we offer them. Whereas the dental sector have had a much tougher time and are only now, I think, Seema, you're only now being able to start thinking about reopening.
That's right. I had found it to be a real eye-opener to see how the veterinary industry functioned. And then when COVID-19 hit, we worked so closely with patients that immediately patient access to dental care was blocked and we were all ordered to cease face-to-face care. So all we've been able to do for the last 10 weeks is provide advice or prescriptions for painkillers or antibiotics. And the NHS did set up urgent care hubs, but the amount of dental care they could provide was really thwarted by operational constraints. And we've been hearing absolutely tragic stories of patients in pain, taking matters into their own hands with DIY dentistry. And meanwhile, whilst I've been on Zoom board meetings with GVG, they have just shown so much agility in the face of this crisis, you know, with asking clients to bring pets in and being able to take the pets out the door and look after them and maintain social distancing. So both industries went in very different directions over the last 10 weeks.
Yeah, I think we, to a certain extent, were concerned at the beginning. It was all very uncertain how things were going to look for us. And I think the first few weeks, it was not quite panic stations, but pretty close to it, to try and shut down the principal threat that we saw was just the work drying up and being unable to keep the business going in its current size because of the reduction in workload. So it was a big race to try and cut out all the non-essential spending, to reduce our footprint, to get to a level where we could try and essentially go into semi-hibernation and ride out the storm. Some of the early forecasts for us were looking very concerning as to what the worst case scenario might look like. And then no sooner had we managed to shut down, the tide started turning and the work started coming back in and the demand from our clients rose rapidly. I guess because the large numbers of people sat at home with their pets and suddenly actually pets getting attention and those issues were still there. The pets were still getting sick, they still need care. And we were finding that no sooner had we managed to shut the practice down that we needed to reopen it again to get things going. Certainly Seema's contribution to that process has been really important because one of the biggest issues that we've really tried to put at the forefront of all our thinking is the impact of this on our people. It's very easy in this scenario to kind of go into panic stations and be very reactive to the challenges that the business face, and you're kind of protecting the business and responding to things. But actually looking at things from a client perspective and also from the perspective of our colleagues, and culture, I think, has been one of the areas that has been really important to us over the last few months, in just being really conscious about what our culture is, how that influences how our response to C19 should be, and recognizing there isn't really a one size fits all that every practice or every business should follow. You need to do what's right for you. And certainly Seema has helped inform that and kind of brings that third party perspective. I wonder, Seema, what your observations have been on culture and the sort of influence of that, both in terms of sort of veterinary and dental sectors.
I think there's been a sense of rational pragmatism across both sectors. It's a poorly understood virus. We don't have a reliable vaccine or antibody testing, and test and tracing is only just launching now in the UK. Demand hasn't abated in both industries, and that's been really reassuring. So we were all thinking that people are going to be scared to come into high street healthcare facilities. In fact, the phone has been ringing. So really, we're all in this together. We don't have the answers. We just need to make reasonable choices. And I think what's happened is there's been a lot of discussion around innovation, thinking out of the box, finding a way forward. I think we had a conversation, didn't we, Mark, at one of the meetings where we said patients still have teeth, they still have pets, they still want us to help them look after them. So let's just look at how best to maintain supply. We will get past this, but it's an opportunity. If we had a blank sheet of paper, how would we design dental service today? And how would we design veterinary services today? And certainly, Mark, you've really motored forward with using telemedicine, haven't you? Because you were already testing the platform to deliver virtual consultations before COVID?
Yes, I think one of the real positives for us through the pandemic has been the learning that we've done as an organisation and as individuals, and kind of learning what we're capable of. So agility and innovation are two areas that you probably wouldn't have necessarily associated strongly with our business or indeed the wider industry. I think we tend to be fairly slow and steady. Being a scientific industry, we tend to take our time and like to look at the evidence and weigh things up very carefully before we make a decision. So that's not to say that we don't innovate and we don't develop, but we do so from a very sort of scientific perspective and a very careful and rational perspective. But pandemics turn out that they don't wait for that sort of careful thought. And we recognized very early on that we needed to find different ways of working. So things like telemedicine, which was a project that we'd only just started earlier this year and thinking that we would probably want to launch something in a year's time. And we were going to spend a year planning and thinking and testing and trialing. Well, we went from that plan. I'd actually just drafted an outline project plan for that to actually launching across the whole practice. I think it was just under 2 weeks. It was about 9 days. So that included, we didn't have a supplier at that time. We had to find a supplier, get everything set up, get all the contracts sorted, and do all the training, etc. And also rethink about how all our processes work. How does this integrate into our normal operational processes? So we surprised ourselves, I think, by demonstrating an ability to do things in a very different way, to use skills that were underutilized. And we found telemedicine to be a hugely important part of the solution that we've needed over the last few months and are now starting to turn our attention to the longer term role that it will have. I think there are things that have happened over the last 3 months that will fundamentally change certainly how veterinary practices work forever. I think we won't go, there are some areas that we simply won't go back to the way that we do things. Telemedicine being a good example, it was something that was gradually rolling out across the profession, but I think there's just been this sudden jump up and it will now be a much more important part of practice in the future.
Yeah, and watching the success that you've had, I've been really encouraged by the way in which your clients have embraced telemedicine for pets. I certainly would toss a double-headed coin to get out of putting our two cats in the car for a visit to the pet. It's so traumatic. It's as traumatic for me as it is for our cats. So hearing the stories of your clients being able to hold their pets up and talk to the vet over a video call and just how successful that's been has got me thinking quite hard and a lot of us obviously thinking quite hard about how to translate that across to dentistry. We've got a big challenge going back to work because we produce aerosol and we're very close to patients. So we used to carry out a dental examination and stay in the treatment room chatting about treatment options, but we've got to slow down now and we've actually got to leave our rooms to rest after a procedure when we are allowed to do procedures, which we're not allowed to do at the moment whilst we're in high alert. But if we start to reserve treatment rooms for treatment, there's no reason why we can't take that conversation elsewhere, to another room, to a virtual space. It's actually so much nicer for the patient than communicating through masks, and it frees up the operating rooms for procedures. It also, you know, dentistry it can be frightening for patients. So we've been thinking about the sort of psychological impact of coming in to see your friendly dentist with all this sort of gear on. So again, I think teledentistry is going to provide solutions in terms of conversations that take place before patients come in for records or for a much quicker examination. And then the care planning and the discussion takes place in a different environment. I think it also will help us to change the way we think in dentistry. We're often in surgery working on procedures, but we've got so many opportunities to use our knowledge and skills differently going forward. The public's growing interest in health and well-being has expanded the demand for treatment modalities in dentistry that promote self-care and the enhancement of self-esteem. Cosmetic dentistry is a growing area of dentistry. And not only are these segments of the market pivotal to the survival of dental businesses, all dental businesses are privately owned high street businesses. And we're heavily invested in technology, and yet our teams remain grossly underutilized as a primary care resource for preventing chronic physical ailments such as obesity and diabetes, mental health conditions which result from low self-esteem and confidence. And we've got this highly skilled workforce of hygienists and dentists who are used to providing advice about healthy eating, kicking sugar habits, gum disease. So I think looking more holistically at what we do as an industry is something that a lot of us in the dental industry have been talking about. And at the beginning, there was a sense of, oh, well, you can't really do dentistry over a video call. And now that sentiment is changing. So actually, yes, you can't do procedures over a video call, but you can do a lot of other things. A lot of the communication and the patient-client relationship and the sort of longer-term management of chronic health conditions, that's a huge area to which we can contribute. So changing direction is something that I think the industry will certainly embrace.
And how, Seema, are you marrying up the various stakeholders and their potentially conflicting priorities, particularly at a time where there's so much anxiety about the future and uncertainty, and yet also a need to be agile and develop new solutions quickly? So I wonder how you're approaching the issue of marrying up the interests of the business with those of patients, with those of your team as well, and trying to forge a way forward together.
Well, I think one of the huge differences that we've talked about in the veterinary industry and the dental industry is that dental practices are structured in a way where the practice owner owns or rents the premises and fits the space out. And then dentists and some hygienists are self-employed contractors who come in to deliver care. So they're not employees. So there really has been a devastating effect on our self-employed dentists. We've managed to protect our employed support staff with furlough. Because we are partly public funded, we haven't qualified for rates and government support in the same way that fully private enterprises have been supported. So there's been a lot of noise, if you look on Twitter, about shutting us down and leaving us bereft. We've now been told we can open, and that has opened up a whole new conversation because we do have close contact. So our staff are frightened about coming back because they haven't necessarily been part of the conversation in the same way. And we've been very careful to keep them involved, to have calls with them, to discuss the, you know, availability of PPE and how our operational processes are going to change and how we are all going to make sure that we all stay safe and we keep our patients safe. The NHS did keep payments going for practices that have NHS contracts, but 60% of dentistry, it's a £10 billion market, and 60% of that is paid for directly by patients for private care. And of the 40% that the NHS does cover, a lot is in secondary care, not in private care. And patients pay for a proportion of NHS dentistry too. So it's not free at the point of delivery. So I was reading something by the Nuffield Trust yesterday about managing expectations of the public, because the cost of healthcare is different. The speed of healthcare and delivery of healthcare is going to be very, very different in hospitals, in high street facilities. So I think it's really been about having open conversations. It's really been about clubbing together as organisations. We have the British Dental Association, which has led the conversation with the government for us. But what I've found throughout this pandemic is that there's been a real sense of camaraderie and support across the industry. Not only has it been very interesting to explore things with GVG, but I've also joined the steering group for a wonderful organisation called the Women Dentist Network. There's a new College of Dentistry in the UK, which is gathering momentum. So people have really risen to the challenge of redesigning healthcare on the high street, redesigning dentistry on the high street. And I think it really feels like the beginning of structural reform, not just for both our industries, but for the delivery of healthcare in general.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot of changes coming, but they seem perhaps more positive opportunities. Picking up on your mention about sort of communication and involvement of the teams, I think we found that transparency has been a massively helpful tool to navigate the choppy waters that we're going through at the moment. One of the first things that we did was introduce something we'd been, again, thinking about for a while, but hadn't quite gotten around to finding the best way of doing it. We introduced town hall meetings for our group. Once every week or once every other week, we get together via Zoom, as everyone seems to now, and just get the whole company together and have a, it's just an opportunity for us to present, the directors present the sort of current thinking and the way that we're thinking of going, but also to consult with the practice. And we found that sort of open dialogue, that transparency has been really important for us in keeping people on board, making sure that we're all heading in the same direction together, that we understand what the issues are. Sometimes, because so many of us are home working now, it can be very hard. We're not getting to practice and see those issues firsthand. So it's been a really helpful way of gathering that information. And I think the things that are coming out of that we perhaps didn't expect are productivity as a business, even though demand has come back from a low point, but it's still below normal. But actually, productivity per person has shot up quite considerably, and I think that's for a number of different reasons. But it's been really interesting to start to see some of these things that we perhaps suspected might have been possible pre-C19, but it was always a bit of a risk to test them out. And now to actually see that by doing things slightly differently and by trying things out, that you can develop these new ways of working. And we're in under a big process at the moment of just really sort of redefining what our client journey looks like.
Yeah, we haven't opened yet. We're opening from next week. So we're just in the process of writing our standard operating procedures, putting together plans for how to open slowly, looking for environmentally friendly solutions for PPE. Our dentists have been experimenting with different teledentistry platforms. And actually, there has been an enormous amount of energy going into how to maintain productivity and how to get back to work safely and sensibly in the face of this enforced slowdown. And in fact, one of the things that has been discussed for years is the idea of longer hours and work-life balance. And as an industry, I don't think I certainly experienced quite a lot of resistance to the idea of longer hours, even though there was patient demand for it. Dentistry is one of those professions where most of our staff are female. It attracts women as a profession. 50% of dentists are registered with the GDC are women. So work-life balance is an important topic in dentistry and in healthcare. And I know we were looking at this with the veterinary industry as well. And right now, we have, a lot of the industry have embraced the idea of having to or wanting to actually work longer hours in order to fulfill the demand, because our supply chain is slowing down. And we're talking about how we can make that work, flexible working, doing your virtual consults, perhaps from home, coming in to do procedures, perhaps having sort of long operating theatre days and then more flexible time working on teledentistry initiatives. So I think, that structural change, there's quite a lot of shared learning still, Mark. I've always been very impressed at how committed vets are to working at weekends and the long hours that you have to do, because you don't have an NHS 111 for pets that clients can turn to if their pets are ill in the night. So watching you run the hospitals at GVG, and it's opened my eyes to the fact that it's challenging rotating lots and lots of healthcare professionals across various sites, but there is an opportunity here to think broadly, to think differently, and address some of those structural changes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been really interesting seeing that marriage. It's a good example of an area where the dental industry and the veterinary industry approach things from a slightly different perspective. There are historical structures and also regulatory environments that affect why businesses operate in a certain way. But there's also within that a lot of opportunity for flexibility. And it's been a really interesting and rewarding part of the last year working together and hearing both Seema's personal advocacy of women in the workplace and as you say, flexible working, work-life rhythm, those sort of issues. And then also learning how the dental industry tends to structure things. And there are certainly things from within the dental industry that we've learned from. And taken on board and are now using to evolve our ways of working. And I think it's true to say that it's gone the other way as well.
Yeah, and I think something that we see in both industries and acknowledge is that people who went into healthcare, doctors and dentists and vets, chose to go into healthcare because they wanted to care for their patients. And that has really come through during the pandemic, that the patient has come first across all industries. The fact that we do operate businesses on the high street in order to deliver that care has presented a whole separate challenge. And I think there needs to be perhaps more learning, even at undergraduate level, for people who've chosen to go into healthcare who won't be necessarily working in a hospital environment where they're not having to worry about the viability of a business. If we could teach a little bit more about how to make the businesses survive and thrive on the high street, I think that would do wonders as well for the healthcare industry. There's a real fear at the moment in dentistry that with the slowdown that we have now, when we go back to work, we've got to rest our surgeries for an hour after a procedure, which means immediately a four-chair practice turns into a two-chair practice overnight with no change in operational overheads. That's going to leave dentists wondering what they're going to do if we can only work at half capacity. So we're challenged with how we bring all our dentists back and keep them engaged. They're self-employed. They're not employed. So if you were in that position, you'd have a massive payroll to be looking at. We're in the position where our dentists are potentially going to be out of work if we've got to go to half capacity. So hence the conversation about longer hours. So, you know, these sort of things, these sort of conversations have actually brought dental associates and dental practice owners closer in the last few weeks, because we're all having to absorb and understand the impact on the business of trying to continue to deliver healthcare differently, but at a much slower pace. And all of these topics seem to be so interlinked, Mark. You know, we're going to have to pick up a very holistic approach to look at how we integrate work-life balance with the slowdown.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a delicate balance, certainly, that I've found. It's not possible to make decisions by committee, and it's not or practical or necessarily always desirable, particularly in times of crisis. I think you need that. You need leadership as well. You need to have a vision for the future and what the priorities of the organisation need to be. But you've also got to make sure that the solutions are not top, as you say, top down, that they're not being dictated to people, that people feel that they're part of the solution rather than having something done to them.
Seema, Mark, we are sadly coming up to the end of our time there. I thank you both so much for that discussion. Certainly fascinating to learn about how insights from one sector can help to drive progress in another. In the interest of maximizing the amount of content from your discussion that is in the podcast, I will limit my quickfire question to one this time round. So I will ask each of you, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever received? Seema, perhaps we can start with you.
It's advice my father's always given me when I'm frustrated or upset about something. Life is all about managing expectations, most of all your own. And that really stands me in good stead whenever I am presented with a challenge. It helps you to keep a cool head. It helps you to step back, look at things objectively, remember that my glass is half full, not half empty, and I'm only limited by my own expectations and the challenges that I see as challenges or obstacles as opposed to opportunities.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. And Mark?
For me, I would go all the way back to school. I remember a careers session with my tutor, and she asked me, just before A-level started, she asked me what I wanted to do. And I said I wanted to go to university to become a vet. And she spent quite a lot of time telling me that I shouldn't do that because it was too hard to get in and I should try something easier like medicine. Or dentistry. So I duly ignored her advice and don't regret doing so. But I think that I guess what I took from that is that it's important to listen to the advice and to consider it, but not all advice should be taken on board and acted upon. You have to be a bit careful about whether it's actually relevant to you.
Thank you both once again.
Thank you very much, Kiana.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Open Room Talks. We hope that you've enjoyed the episode. For inquiries, please feel free to get in touch via email on hello@openroomevents.com. For details on future episodes, please follow us on LinkedIn or visit openroomevents.com. Until next time.